The Pilgrim's Progress Reloaded by David Umstadt. Chapter 1. The Day the Oni Awoke. He had never noticed the blood on his hands. Not because he never got bloody. Firing hundreds of rounds of explosive ordnance into one's enemies was not a pastime conducive to cleanliness. But he had never looked at the blood before. Why was he looking at it now? He surveyed the carnage of the battlefield. The evangelists hadn't tried to fight back this time. Some had sat, some had run, but each person had been found by a bullet. Why did that bother him? The evangelists were the enemy, and Apollyon made the most destructive ammunition in the Darklands. So when destructive ammunition were mixed with enemies, the results were supposed to be good. This did not look good. The man thought back to the hundreds of battles he had been in and the delight he had taken in the gore and carnage. Where had the delight gone? Did it drip from the tubes and circuits of his burden? He checked himself. No, only blood dripped from his burden, as usual. There didn't appear to be anything wrong with his burden. The burden was a suit of power armor, a protective shell to blunt the attacks of the evangelists. At least, that's what it was supposed to be. Now his protection felt like a cage. The burden encased him completely. No piece of flesh lay bare for the world to see, every inch covered by metal and circuitry. Even his head was encased in the invisible force field that projected from the collar, encasing even his mind and eyes in the inescapable force of the burden. But this was normal. Everyone had a burden. He'd been born with it. It was a part of him. The power suit plugged into his brain, operating from mental commands. The burden was no different from his arms or eyes. Why was he thinking about it now? Something was wrong. He couldn't move his burden. The suit was so heavy that a soldier couldn't move an unpowered one. Had his become unpowered? Were his components being hacked? Or was something wrong with his mind, causing him to feel disconnected from what was supposed to be a comfort? What had changed?
Aha! Screamed a tiny grating voice from the man's shoulder. I've spliced into the main programming. Don't worry, I've almost got the conditioning down to 23.78%.
The man leapt to the side, his powered servos acting before his mind had time to register his actions. So he could still move. Why had he thought he couldn't? He grasped for the source of the noise on his shoulder, and his fist closed around a small metallic figure. As soon as the motion started, his suit went limp, and he felt like he couldn't move anymore. Without the power to keep his fist clenched, the figure squirmed out of his fingers and perched itself on top of his glove.
Hey, I'm trying to help, the figure said in a high-pitched whine.
The man winced at the sound, the worst kind of robotic voice, like a robotic car alarm accompanied by chalk dragging across a chalkboard and the sound of two balloons rubbing together, the robotic equivalent to a human voice screeching in pain. The figure was tiny, an automaton with the same proportions as he had, with two glass telescopic sensors for eyes. These eyes were huge and wide and seemed much larger than they should be. The automaton looked around from place to place, intensely alert as if watching for something life-threatening.
Put me back, said the small figure. I'm not done with my work yet. There's no time to lose. You're in terrible danger.
Who are you? What are you doing on my shoulder? The figure paused, looking a bit unsure of itself.
Isn't that where we consciences usually hang out? The shoulder? It's a trope, right? Did I do that wrong? I'm sorry. I must not be very good at this.
The man groaned, and his worry vanished, replaced with annoyance.
A conscience? I've heard of you little imps. No wonder my burden doesn't work. You gremlins try to keep us from doing anything fun. That kind of cynical attitude will get you nowhere in life.
Conscience then clambered up the man's burden back to his shoulder.
You must not stop my work. Like I said, you're in incredible danger.
I thought you said it was terrible danger. The man tried to grab the robot, but the tiny figure was too quick. His movements still felt reduced thanks to whatever it was that the infernal machine had done to his burden. No matter. It was such a small thing. What great harm could it do?
Yes, yes,
Conscience said.
Incredible, terrible danger, and other various seemingly hyperbolic adjectives.
What's the danger? The man said with a twinge of both curiosity and annoyance. Conscience opened his mouth to respond, but two shutters on his eyes squinted as if he were processing his answer. A tiny progress bar displayed over the glass of his eyes. After the progress bar vanished, Conscience looked even more uncomfortable.
I don't actually know the specifics, but I do know the danger is terrible and incredible. Anyway, back to work.
The man felt Conscience reach into one of the electrical ports on his burden. Then Conscience gave a squeal of delight.
Aha! I've got it!
Searing pain fired through the man's nerves. He fell, the weight of his armor pressing him against the ground. Before, the suit must have been an on-emergency power. So this was what an unpowered burden felt like. Then came the memories and the pain.
What in the name of sacrilegious proclamations? The man said. I killed them! Why did I...
He looked up.
The blood from the battlefield seeped toward him. When he saw it, he understood. The blind, careless delight he and his comrades had taken from the slaughter of these innocents was draining from his soul like the blood from his face. "What have I done?" the man said in a tone of disbelief and guilt.
"Bad," Conscience said, as if answering a mundane question. "Really bad stuff. That's what I've been trying to tell you. Your burden was in the way, numbing your mind. Took me ages to get through." "But I..."
The man tried to speak, but whatever he had thought to say vanished from his mind. What excuse could he give? After a long pause, he said, "I didn't know." Conscience slid off the man's shoulder and looked at him for a while, as if making sure he had heard correctly.
"You didn't know murdering a bunch of men, women, and children was wrong? Is that supposed to be better?" But...
The man couldn't talk through his stammering.
"But it's like you said, this burden was messing with my head."
Conscience blinked a few times.
"And that makes it okay?"
"No, it's just that I thought they were my enemies."
"You being wrong about something doesn't make what you did right."
"I thought I was doing the right thing. It didn't feel wrong. It felt good."
"You're making yourself sound worse again,"
Conscience said.
"It shouldn't have felt that good, should it? Why did it feel that good? Everyone did it. They said it was normal and natural."
They who?"
Conscience looked around as if worried about an imminent attack.
"Did they make you do it?"
"No,"
said the man. Conscience looked back at the man.
"Then that means you did it."
But...
The man's eyes grew wide in terror as he pleaded for an excuse, a reason, an explanation.
"If someone else didn't make you do it, then you did it,"
Conscience said.
"I think. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm not very smart."
He looked down with a sad expression.
"I never thought it was that bad," the man said, desperate to say anything, anything that could justify such obvious evil. "Other people killed so many more than I did. Maybe they went overboard, but not me."
Conscience folded his arms. The tiny bits of metal made a clicking sound as they touched, and he raised the shutter of one eye higher than the other.
"Are you saying that killing people is not a big deal since other people killed more?"
Conscience and the man stared at each other.
"Well," the man said, "when you put it that way, it sounds ridiculous."
"No, no,"
Conscience raised his hands.
"The way you put it sounds just as ridiculous."
"I've got to do something."
The man tried to rise, but the weight of his burden made movement impossible.
"Nah,"
Conscience said.
"You shot them up real good. Pretty sure you humans don't do too well after you've been shot a bunch. At least, I don't think so. How do sinners even work? So many moving parts."
"Sinners."
A twinge of anger shot through the man. "That's what those evangelists call us. Those judgmental, self-righteous pricks. They keep trying to mind control us with their judgmental psychic attacks. That's why we have to kill them so quickly. I wish I could just rip apart every last..."
He stopped himself. He was demanding more blood, more death. Had he really fallen back into his old ways so quickly?
What he had done to the dead before him was wrong. That was plain.
"I've got to stop this," the man tried to move again.
"Yeah, that's what I've been saying."
Conscience tried hopping back up onto the man's shoulder, but his little legs weren't quite long enough. He only made it up far enough to grab onto the man's shoulder. He tried pulling himself up, but couldn't.
"Here."
The man reached down and helped Conscience up.
"Thanks,"
Conscience said.
"Anyway, yeah, we gotta stop with these crazed murder sprees. Evil as hell. Literally."
"Wait." The man froze. "I just moved my arm to help you up." Conscience looked down at the man's hand.
"Yep, that's what you did."
He looked confused.
"Is that weird?"
"I thought I couldn't move. Without the power of the burden, the weight should make movement impossible. I shouldn't be able to even move my fingers."
"But you just did,"
Conscience said.
"But how?"
"I just said I didn't know how you sinners work."
Conscience had a hint of anger in his voice, which sounded more adorable than threatening.
"I don't understand," the man said.
"Well, one of us is hallucinating."
Conscience looked introspective, as if trying to decipher some grand puzzle.
"I don't think it's me, because I'm just a philosophical personification of the instinctual omnitemporal moral paradigms programmed into all human psyches. You're human. For all I know, you could be high as a kite."
"Wait, you're a what?"
"A conscience. Didn't I say that? Uh-oh, did I say the long thing again?"
The man opened his mouth to answer. A massive object struck the ground several yards away. From the impact, plumes of dust and dirt erupted into the air and sent shockwaves from the ground into the man's flesh and bone. The weight of the burden kept the man from being moved back. He looked closer at the foreign object. It was a drop pod. The evangelist had sent reinforcements. Power surged back into the man's burden. Without a thought, he reached up towards his back. A compartment popped open, and the butt of a Gauss rifle slid out. He drew the weapon from his back, shouldered it, and... A figure stepped from the pod. The man fired at the figure. The round struck the figure in the center of the chest before he saw who it was. There was a spray of blood. The figure looked down at their chest, then up at the man.
Well, that was impolite.
The figure was a woman, with piercing eyes and an expression of extreme annoyance. She stumbled forward, but her expression of annoyance stayed. The man uttered an expletive beneath his breath.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to...
Yeah, sure you didn't. The woman kept walking, her pace more haggard and unstable with each step. Her voice showed no sign of the usual inconvenience commonly associated with disemboweling explosive gunshot wounds.
I said we should wait till your conscience had broken through your burden. I said you wouldn't shoot any of us. I said it will be fine. Well, I guess you proved me wrong, you jerk.
The man lowered his rifle.
You're with the enemy. No, I'm with a troop of traveling porcupine jugglers. Yes, of course I'm with the enemy.
The woman sounded insulted. The man looked closer. The woman wore combat camouflage, except the colors were the opposite from blending in with the dismal terrain. She stood out like a giant mutant roach in a bowl of cereal. She wore a sticker name tag that said, Hello, my name is Missionary.
Your name is Missionary?
No, the woman said, her tone increasingly angry.
Now, my name is Martyr because of your little stunt, which means I have to change my name tag, so, you know, thanks for that.
Martyr pulled off her name tag and wiped away the writing. Then she drew a dry erase marker from her pocket and wrote Martyr on the name tag. She tried sticking it back on her clothes, and it fluttered off.
Now it won't stick well, she said, mumbling.
Are you going to be okay? The man motioned towards the woman's gaping bullet wound. The question seemed stupid, but she was acting so calm.
Nope, I'll be dead in seconds.
You don't seem too burnt up about it. The woman started laughing as if the man had just told an excessively funny joke. The man stuttered.
So, do you know how I can get this burden off? Oh, I knew all kinds of useful things. I had this whole speech prepared that would send you on an epic quest, but I can't do that now. You'll have to settle for this.
She tossed him a small wrist computer, which fell to the ground between them, surrounded by the blood of the battlefield as if beckoning the man forward. The man stared at it.
Well, Martyr said, breaking the silence, this has been fun. I'm going to go ahead and pass out from blood loss now. I'd say good luck, but we kind of have complicated feelings towards that phrase.
Martyr fell face forward onto the ground. She didn't move. Seconds passed.
Well, that was bizarre, the man said. Bizarre?
Conscience whined into the man's ear.
You killed that woman!
Only a bit.
We talked about this. Murder bad. You'd think it'd be easy for you not to slaughter innocent people. I mean, really. She was right. If nothing else, at least, it's rude.
For a moment, the man could not listen to the machine. The thrill and glory of the kill kicked in, as always. Pure pleasure flooded his veins. Then, faster than usual, the feeling faded, and he realized what he'd done.
Oh no! And she was going to help me!
Conscience slapped him across the face. The man felt shock at this. How had the robot passed his hand through the invisible force field protecting his head?
That's what you care about? That she was going to help you? How selfish!
Conscience shook his head, disappointment etched across his little metallic face. The power drained from the burden, and the man slammed onto the ground again like before, only worse. Moving was even harder.
Not this again, the man said. It's like I can only move when I'm doing evil. She dropped something. What is it?
Conscience motioned toward the device on the ground. A wrist computer, probably one of those annoying AI programs that lists all the things you are doing wrong and then in any given second.
Great! Let's work for me!
Conscience spoke with an uncomfortable amount of excitement. The man tried reaching for the device. The weight of his suit made movement impossible. He gave an exasperated sigh of defeat.
I can't get to it. But you can, Conscience said. Don't go saying you can't do something when you can.
No, I can't move.
You certainly could move when you shot that poor woman.
Conscience turned his face and gave a disdainful huff.
Shut up.
The man swung his fist to knock Conscience from his shoulder. But Conscience was quick. He jumped into the air and landed on the man's metal-encased fist. The man stared at his fist, once again shocked by his sudden return of mobility.
Now listen here, mister,
Conscience spoke as if he were scolding a child.
You can lie here till you get bored enough to kill another innocent person, or we can see what that woman just gave her life trying to give you. I think you should look at it, but what do I know? I'm just the thing that showed you how evil you were in the first place.
But I can't move.
How about I scream into your ear until you move? That might do the trick.
Conscience climbed up next to the man's head and leaned against his ear.
No, no, that won't be necessary. The man swatted the robot away. I'll give it a shot. Just be quiet.
He struggled against his burden, which seemed to be getting heavier. He tried again.
Maybe I should yell anyway,
Conscience said. The man stared at the carnage again. He looked at the faces of the slain, now frozen there from death. Had all these people died trying to give him what Martyr had thrown to the ground? And he couldn't even move to see what it was. He summoned all his strength to move, but it wasn't enough. But that didn't matter. Either he would move or he would die trying. If the suit powered back up, who knew what other evils he would do? He rose. He was on his feet. How had he moved? The weight hadn't changed. His strength hadn't changed. What was different? He moved one leg forward, stumbled, then moved the other. "Hey, I'm doing it," the man said. At this point, he stopped moving and fell flat on his face. After tumbling off the man's shoulder, Conscience landed directly on his head, his legs kicking in the air for a few seconds like the legs of an overturned insect. He righted himself and scowled at the man.
"Yes, you're the image of human bipedal locomotion."
"Hold on, hold on." Again, the man tried to move. "I made a mistake." He got closer to the vise.
"It's amazing what you can do when it's something you can't do,"
Conscience said with a tone of sarcasm. "Shut the hell up, Conscience," the man said.
"Ha! I wish I could shut up hell, but I can't."
Several more minutes of face-planting brought him closer to the device. Finally, he reached out and snatched up the small wrist computer. It had a holographic projector and screen, with several buttons he didn't recognize. He slid the device around his right wrist and turned it on. Conscience climbed across the man's shoulder and peeked down at the device.
"What is it?"
"A holographic display for AI programs. Let's see if I can turn it on." He pressed a few buttons. "Ah, here we go. It's one of those religious text AIs. The ones those evangelists like so much. Just like I thought. No doubt Martyr gave it to me to indoctrinate me into their religion."
"You should turn it on," Conscience said.
"All right. But I know how these things work. They're always all Puritan and well-mannered. They take the slightest offense at anything indecent or even remotely vulgar or violent. It's a wonder these evangelists even know how to breed, given how prudish they are. Here, watch. It'll be some nun dressed in a habit or something." The man pressed a button, and an image projected from the device and coalesced onto the ground. The image was about as big as Conscience, a picture of the same woman who had given him the device, only she was naked and in a bath. Her back was to the man and Conscience, and she didn't react to them at first. The man took a step back, but since the projection was coming from his wrist, the image moved with him. Conscience made a metallic grating noise from his mouth, which was probably his best impersonation of a human clearing his throat. The woman turned her head and immediately screamed.
"What the malediction? Have you no decency? I was in the middle of scrubbing my hard drive. You should check before you just activate an AI system."
"I'm sorry." The man looked away. "I thought you were some prudish religious text. I didn't expect such..."
"What? Reality?"
the woman said. "Here, let me flip to one of my different modes. Lots of nudity in the first few lines of my programming." The man looked back. The holographic woman now wore a long robe reminiscent of ancient times. She looked very similar to Martyr and even sounded a lot like her.
"So, you're one of Apollyon's goons," she said. "A sinner who roams around killing innocent folk and robbing them of their possessions."
The woman tapped her foot as if impatient.
"Is it that obvious?"
the man said.
"Maybe I just know, because you're certainly not a..."
The woman turned and saw the carnage of the battlefield. She gasped.
"What the son of a snake and a morally perverse woman did this rubbish?"
She looked back at Conscience and the man, who exchanged a glance.
"What?"
Her face brightened as if she just realized their meaning.
"Oh, you're confused because of my nomenclature. I've got one of those more child-friendly translations, so I apologize if my vulgarity is difficult to understand."
"Translation?" the man said. "Of what?"
"I'm sorry, I failed to introduce myself."
She turned and gave an elegant bow.
"I am called Book, the Overseer's word to mankind."
"Book?" the man said.
"What? Is your brain so much a whitewashed tomb as your soul?" "Yes, book. Bible is how it's translated in some languages. But Bible is a word that means book, so I figured it's less pretentious to just call myself Book."
"Bible? I've heard of you. You're some sacred text. What's with all the..." The man's voice trailed off.
"What's with all the violent speech, immodesty, and general vulgarity? Yeah, a lot of people get the wrong idea about me. Most of me is history of some super evil people. I mean, sure, all people are evil, but I got some especially bad ones detailed in my archives. Forgive me if I'm a little crass. There was some rubbish that went down in early history of the world, let me tell you." "Rubbish means..."
"I know what rubbish means," the man said.
"Uh-huh. Well, the history of the world isn't as clean, pretty, or nice as people would like. And the road to the Celestial Station isn't a primrose path, so don't expect me to act like a princess."
"Celestial Station?" Conscience slapped the man across the cheek.
"Would you stop that?"
"Stop what?" the man said.
"That! You've answered everything this woman has said with a question."
"A question?" This time the man was smiling.
"Hey, that one was on purpose," Conscience said. "No, it's fine," Book said. "Questioning me is good. Not enough people ask questions, good or otherwise. I can take it. Question me, analyze me, and debate me. Get angry, hate me, just don't ignore me. I'm strong enough to handle your objections and vitriol."
"I have a question,"
Conscience said. Book looked at Conscience with amusement.
"Your conscience is activated. That'll make things easier." "Why do you look like the lady this guy shot?"
Conscience said.
What?
Book swelled, reaching the size of a small cat as she looked at the man. You shot her? Do you have any idea how wrong that is? For starters, it's just rude.
That's what I told him, Conscience said.
The man groaned. It's just like you religious programs to go listing all our little infractions. Book stared at the man, as if trying to decide how to explain how wrong he was. Then looked at Conscience.
Have you taught this man nothing? I only got his burden powered down a few minutes ago. Sorry.
Conscience's voice sounded sad.
But it's not my fault. I don't know anything. I just feel there's an impending doom that is, impending.
Oh, good. You're not completely useless, Book said in a tone of genuine relief. The man waited for her to explain, his body tensing with anticipation. What was this impending doom? Book's projector materialized a holographic table and chair. She sat in one of the chairs and poured herself a glass of holographic wine. She sipped it while looking up at the man as if expecting him to do something. The man waited. Book said nothing.
Do you have any more to say?
The man said. Book gave a coy and condescending smirk.
Did you want to ask me something?
Anger rose in the man's heart.
You know, just because of your attitude, I don't.
He hesitated.
I mean, not yet. I do have other questions.
Oh, well, if your impending doom isn't important enough, by all means, let's get to important topics then,
Book said with potent sass.
You're kind of a jerk, aren't you?
The man said.
Yes,
Book said with an even expression.
Was that one of your questions?
Aren't you supposed to be super prudish?
Yes, I am,
Book said with a straight face.
Sin is the worst. Tons of it out there. Don't do it.
Why?
Because it's wrong. It destroys your soul. It often hurts others, and the wages of sin is total atomic annihilation, like the killing of these people. That is evil. Hopefully, I don't need to explain why.
Wait, the man raised his hand. What was that about total atomic annihilation? Book stopped to sip her wine and seemed impressed by the question. Almost.
Oh, yeah. There's a satellite in orbit. It's called the Celestial Station. The overseer of the station is about to launch a massive atomic strike on this entire planet. Why do you think they call your hometown the City of Destruction?
The man thought for a moment.
Because it sounds cool?
Book laughed. Not a jovial, friendly laugh, but a mocking, derogatory laugh. The man wanted to wring the little woman's neck, but her holographic nature made such necessary violence impossible.
So we're getting nuked?
He weighed the words, trying to comprehend their significance, hoping his statement would quell the annoying little woman's laughter.
Why would the overseer of the Celestial Station do such a thing?
Book waved her hand around the carnage, as if that answered the question.
You think the overseer will just sit around while you people run around killing and thieving all over everywhere like you own the place? If the overseer lets evil go unpunished, then he would be evil himself. And the overseer isn't evil. He wrote the book on not being evil.
And that book is you.
What? No! Do you think if you follow everything I tell you, then you won't be evil? You wish. Even if you could perform that impossible task, I'm afraid it's too late for you.
Too late how? You ever lied?
No.
Book's face grew sarcastic.
Well, you did just now, so that counts. It's the rad pit for you.
Rad as in good?
No, rad as in radiation, from multiple direct atomic explosions. And I'm not talking about death here. I'm talking about total atomic annihilation. I'm talking about everything good in the world being annihilated, taken back by the overseer who gave it to you in the first place. Do you know what happens when all good that you were ever given is taken back and you're stuck in a pool of atomic cataclysm?
Death?
You wish? No, you humans are eternal beings. Well, semi-eternal. Well, you'll go on forever, so death can never truly come.
That's nice and horrifying.
You're right about the second part.
And this is all because I've told one lie. Book sent the man a condescending glance. Fear struck the man's heart.
That's not fair.
Conscience raised his hand.
If it helps, he also slaughtered all these people mercilessly, and until now he had no remorse about it.
Shut up, Conscience. You're changing the subject. The man said. I can't believe that just a few mistakes would condone someone to total atomic annihilation. I may have done something wrong, but there are others who have done far worse. At least I killed people quickly. I'm not like others who torture people to death or do unthinkable things to them before killing them. I'm so much better than any of that. Punish those people. You can't expect me to be perfect.
Book laughed again.
Yeah, it's funny how you humans always think that people who are worse than you are the ones who deserve punishment. Talk to those people, and they'll say the same thing. Punish the people who are worse than me, not me.
People better than you want you to see punished for murder, but they should get off free even though they've lied, stolen, hated, betrayed, and 100 other crimes they think are no big deal. Repetitive lawbreaking has numbed their souls to the pain of their immorality. But there has to be a line somewhere. Yes, the line is literally anything wrong. That's the only consistent standard. Evil is evil. That would mean there's no hope for anyone. Surely everyone has done at least some evil. Yep, it's total atomic annihilation for the lot of you. Book smiled and went back to sipping her holographic wine. The man sputtered. I feel like there's something else you're going to say. Book winked. Nah, I'm going to let you stew for a while, contemplating your imminent atomic annihilation. I've got to do something about it. If only there was some guide, some way of knowing what I should do next. I think Martyr was going to tell me what to do. You know, before I shot her. Who else can help me? Who do you think built that conscience on your shoulder? Book said. Who do you think programmed me and told those evangelists to warn everybody about the impending apocalypse? The man paused to think. The person who can help me? Book looked unimpressed. Yes. Then there is something I can do to keep me from getting nuked? No, not exactly. It's complicated. There is a place you can throw yourself upon the mercy of the Overseer. Book paused, looking the man over, analyzing him. The man looked desperate. That's my only chance? No chance involved. Celestial Station will beam up anyone it deems good, just before commencing with total atomic annihilation. Then I just have to be good. Book looked at the piles of corpses, then turned to the man. Yeah, good luck with that. The man felt embarrassed. Come on, is anyone good? Nope, Book said. Nobody is good, except that one guy. It's this burden I'm wearing. The man touched his chest. This has made me so evil. If I could just remove it. The only person who can do that is the Overseer, Book said. Okay, how do I get him to do that? Book got up, and the table vanished into a blur of holographic sparks. She pointed towards the horizon. Do you see yonder wicket gate? Do I what now? The man gave a confused tilt of his head. Oh, sorry. Old habit. You aren't the first person I've sent on this pilgrimage. I hope not the last. There's a gate in the distance. Go through it, and you can get your burden removed. The man waited, but Book said nothing more. There had to be more. That's it? That sounds easy. Jumping off a skyscraper is easy, Book said, but the landing is hard. That's ominous. Good! You're starting to learn. Now get going before total atomic annihilation starts, or you get violently eviscerated by some mutant creature. It'd be best for that to happen after you get through the gate, not before. That burden needs to be taken off your back. If it's still on when total atomic annihilation hits, then the Celestial Station won't extract you. Now get moving. Book shoved against the man, pushing him onward, but her hologram passed right through the man, having no physical effect on him. All right, then. The man took one step, then hesitated. Wait, what was that about super mutants eviscerating me? Never mind about that. The path, Book pointed. Do you see it? The man looked. No, all I see is endless miles of irradiated wasteland. What was that about super mutants? Ugh. Book vanished, then appeared again next to the man's head. She pointed. Now do you see that glow in the distance? Oh, yeah, it's a place where the radiation is especially severe. Follow that glow till you find the gate. The man stared at the horizon. Just moving a few feet in his unpowered burden had seemed hard enough. I'll need to power up my burden if I'm going to make it through all that. Conscience slapped the man on the side of the head, making him wince. Jiminy Cricket here is right, Book said. Don't power up. Your burden will tempt you with unthinkable evil. You'll just have to muscle through it and walk to the gate the old-fashioned way. Don't waste any time. Atomic annihilation isn't going to wait on you forever. But it's so hard to move. Book folded her arms and scowled. Wow, you're just full of complaints. Were you not listening to my previous rant on how hard this is going to be? Get good. But I can't. Book pointed at the man and smiled. Exactly! But let me ask, which is more important, your personal comfort or the chance at redemption from your burden and salvation from the threat of total atomic annihilation? She paused, waiting for her words to sink in. Conscience interrupted, his hand raised, jumping up and down on the man's shoulder.
Ooh, I know! I know this one! Pick me!
Both the man and Book ignored Conscience. The man said, What about the super mutants and the evisceration and the radiation?
Brook changed her tone to sound like the man's. What about the radiation? Do you hear yourself? That's what you sound like. Do you know how much radiation there's going to be when the Celestial Station turns this whole place to glass? You'll wish you could drink the radiation coming from that glow, just for a change of pace. The path you seek goes through the Dark Lands. They are lands of chaos, pain, persecution, weakness, and other generally impolite catastrophes. And yes, monsters like super mutants and worse. You're worried about a little radiation? You follow that path, and you'll face monsters, men, and maniacs. The very world itself will try to force you back with rivers of acid and hosts of ghoulish giants and growling beasts, all while your mind and soul are torn asunder with desires to go back to your evil ways, which you will most likely do. It's a hard journey, not a quest you should take lightly. The man stared at Book, his eyes wide open. So, Book said, ready to go? Let's do it, Christian said, and the second he did, a bullet struck him in the back.
What new foe has shot Christian in the back? Will he make it to the gateway before he is struck by total atomic annihilation? Will the answers to these questions be in the next episode, or will it end in another gratuitous cliffhanger? Find out next time on Pilgrim's Progress Reloaded.
Pilgrim's Progress was written by David Umstadt, edited by William Umstadt, and performed by a band of trained monkeys we have locked in a voice synthesizer factory.